"Instead of whom? Is it father?" I asked, aware that my voice was trembling. The tension in my chest was worse, an almost unbearable tightness, as if my heart would burst. "Father is injured, but not too badly, and he will live," Suniva answered, wiping her face. "Who then, Suniva?" She now looked utterly shattered, her spirit burned away by sorrow. She sighed. "Curdic, it's Cuthwin. Cuthwin is dead." I opened my mouth, but aghast at what she had just said, no words came out. It couldn't be true, could it? Cuthwin, my brother, dead. Of all my family, he had been more the warrior than the farmer, unlike my father. He had always seemed so strong and so able, yet he had died last night, fighting to defend our home. How? When? During the raid, a group of Welsh stormed the villa. I hid beneath my bed as they burst in, but Mother took Mildred and the slaves out through the kitchens to hide in the fields to the east. The raiders stole what they could, including Mother's beautiful amber jewellery. Cuthwin, Father, and some of the villagers who were around when the attack came tried to delay the raiders to give the others a chance to escape. "Our people fought the raiders in the courtyard," she explained. Then, for a few minutes, her face contorted, as fresh tears forced their way out. Eventually, she spoke again. "Well, I snuck out onto the balcony, peeked down at them, and from where I could see, they'd almost seen them off, and three of them certainly won't be going back to Elmet if that's where they're from." Then, Cuthwin and Father seemed to have got carried away and pursued the others out of the door. "I went to your room and looked out the front of the house, and I could still see what was happening, though I wish I had not." She cried a bit more, and it took almost a minute for her to be able to talk again. I was too stunned for what I was hearing to say anything, so I let her take as long as she needed. "Well, then what happened is the raiders rallied around their chieftain, a great brute with only one eye and a scar where the other should be. He charged forward, and he... Oh, Curdic, he cut Cuthwin down with a great axe, just hacked into him. I think he was dead before he hit the ground. Father went into a fury then, and attacked the chieftain with a wood axe and a sax. I think the anger of seeing Cuthwin killed gave him strength, and he managed to shatter the chieftain's axe shaft." My heart was pounding inside me, and I could still say nothing. I was thinking back to the night before, when I had seen just such a man go back through the woods, all the time unaware that this man had just killed my brother. "Well, that made the beast furious, and he smashed his shield into Father's ribs, and I heard several crack. Father just collapsed, and I thought he was dead too. Then the one-eyed man picked up Cuthwin's sword, the one that Uncle had. I think he would have killed Father with it, but just then one of the villagers arrived, and he had a bow and shot a few arrows at the raiders that forced them to back away. They then took off north towards Wixton, but Curdic, the bastards took Cuthwin's sword with him." It struck me as odd that my throat could feel so dry and my eyes so moist at the same time. Cuthwin had always been such a strong part of my life, I simply could not believe he was dead. Suniva and I had never been that close, but sorrow brought us together, and there, between the villa and the village, we held each other and cried. Eventually, I pulled away from her and held her with my hands. "How are Father and Mother now? What about Mildred?" At Mildred's name, Suniva looked away and gave another great sob. "Oh, Curdic, I don't know where Mildred is. Mother said she struck out through the fields to peek at the warriors." "What?" I said, stepping away from my sister. "Mother tried to stop her, but you know what Mildred is like. She just scampered away. Mother went after her, of course, but then some of the warriors came close to the fields and she had to hide again. When she finally came out, she could not find Aidan, Carefid, or Gwen. But she could not find Mildred either. Curdic, no one knows where our sister is." I stared at her, and she looked right back at me. The horror of the moment just seemed too vast to bear. Cuthwin was dead. Mildred was missing. I just shook my head, and holding hands, we both walked up the track to the villa in silence and despair. As it came into view, I gasped. The white walls were charred and blackened where they had been set on fire. Although, being stone, it had fared better than the hovels in the village. We went in, past the main door, which was hanging from one hinge, smashed and irreparable. In the entrance room that Carefoot had once told me was called an atrium, whatever that meant, I stopped as a chill shot down my body when I saw that Cuthwin was lying in state there, decked out in his richest clothes, like a warrior god slain in the last battles that were yet to come at the end of the world. I walked over to him, looked down at that cold, pale face where once such life had dwelt, and again the tears came. The next day or two went by in a blur. Only a few days before, I would have given anything to fight as a warrior, for the songs of the poets told of the glories of battle. Now, those words seem almost lies to me. All those ballads and great sagas told little of the reality of war. The burning huts in the village, the charred villa, Mildred missing, and the body of Cuthwin brought it all home to me. We buried Cuthwin the next day up on the north ridge near to my grandfather. I helped my father and Suniva lower him into his grave. He was dressed in his finest clothes, such as he had donned for feasts and holy days. He wore his trousers and a blue tunic fastened with a belt, from which hung a knife and a flint box. His best soft leather boots were on his feet, and he was wrapped in a great green cloak. At his feet we lay his sacks, shield, and a bow. Alongside him was an ash spear. A nearby priest came and spoke of our brother going to be with Woden, to feast with his fellow warriors while he waited for the great battle that ended all days. The words failed to bring much succour to me. I looked around at the others. My father and sister were staring down into the grave with faces the colour of marble. My mother was sobbing, totally lost in grief. Nearby, most of the village had turned up out of respect for the family. Almost all of them looked distant, surrounded by their own grief or worried about missing loved ones, just as we were. After Cuthwin was buried, six other men from the village were laid into their own graves. We stayed on that hilltop whilst all were interred. My father's expression grew grimmer with each inhumation. What was he thinking? Was he angry at the Almatay or himself? It was his duty to protect these people. That was the price of their service to him. Did he feel like he had failed in that duty? If any of the villagers felt that way, none of them said a word. Indeed, several came over to offer their condolences and compliments Cuthwin's skill as a warrior. After the end of the service, we then returned to an empty villa, which felt too cold and too quiet. Gradually, over the next 2 days, we began to get an idea of what had happened. Some 100 warriors had come from the east, over the border from Elmet. It seems they had passed very close to where we were hunting boar in the forest, but had, somehow, missed us. They split then, 30 heading for the village, and the rest curved to the north towards Wixton. They had killed half a dozen in the village, as well as Cuthwin, all those which we had buried. As many again were wounded, including my father. Then there was the 8 or 9 missing, mostly villagers, but also Mildred, Aidan, and his parents. The last 3 vexed us. Welsh slaves missing after a Welsh raid. One of them I had seen walking and armed westwards towards Elmet. It did not take much for many in the village to conclude the obvious. Aidan and his parents were spies and in league with the Welsh and had taken advantage of the raid to escape. Aedith looked small and sad as she sat on a stool in the villa kitchen where Mother and Suniva had been preparing food when she had come to find us. She told us that, when the raiders arrived in the village, there was a brief fight with the few men there who were not in the company, and so away with us in the woods. These were too young or old, too ill or too unfit. None were given any mercy, and most died there and then, though some had fled towards the villa. Then the raiders started searching the village. They took anything of value, but they seemed to be looking for a specific item. They kept babbling on about something, but none of us could understand what it was they were saying. "Do you know what it was they were looking for, child?" asked my father. "Not at first, my lord, but then this horrible big brute with one eye started asking questions in English. He said he knew we had a great treasure, and he wanted to know where it was. Well, I didn't know what he meant, and he slapped me hard and said something about—" Aedith hesitated and looked at my mother. "Go on," urged my father. He kept saying, "Amber treasure. Where is the amber treasure?" Then he went off with his men and we were rounded up and led away. "Curdick found us soon after that, of course," she said, eyes flicking towards me and nodding. We sat in silence for a moment and exchanged glances, but I could tell from the look in the eyes of my family that we were all thinking the same thing. Aedith had said that the amber treasure is what One Eye had asked about. It could only be one thing we knew of. It had to be Mother's priceless amber and silver set of jewellery. treasure from the distant Baltic brought by raiders to Deira, and then becoming a king's gift to a great warrior. Mother started crying. She had never worn it before in public, and now, the day after she had proudly displayed the amber treasure, the raiders had come looking for it, and they had killed Cuthwin and taken Mildred because of it. "It's my fault. It's all my fault," she sobbed. Father went across and took her in his arms, rocking her gently as if she was a child. Then, even while showing such tender love to his wife, he turned to me, and his eyes now burnt with terrible anger, as he whispered to me a single word, "Aidan." I nodded. Aidan the slave, bitter at his lot in life, was a spy. He had somehow passed news of the great treasure that lay hidden at the villa, and the prize drew a warband looking for it. He had escaped with his parents, and, though his treachery had lost us the jewels, it had taken two far more precious items from us, Cuthwin and Mildred. "Aidan," I replied. The next day Lila arrived at the villa with the news from Wixton. When it had been attacked, Ethelric was still there, and alongside Wallace had fought bravely enough to repel the raiders. Even so, Wixton had suffered losses too, as well as having more prisoners taken away. Ethelric then dithered about what to do, but Wallace persuaded him on a course of action, and in the end, the prince had agreed. "So I am sent to summon the Wixton company to muster to Lord Wallace immediately. You will go to strike back against the bastards. You are going to get our people back and make these Elmite pay for what they did. You are going to Elmit." So there it was at last, war. And Curdic, son of Kenred of the Villa, was going along. I gathered my spear, bone helmet, sword and shield, and as I prepared to say my goodbyes, I wandered over to the burial ground, knelt down and swore an oath over the grave of my dead brother. "Cuthwin," I whispered, "I'm going away now. I'm going away to war. I will come back, I swear it, but I have work to do first, and promises to keep." Firstly, I thought of my little sister Mildred, taken as a prize of war, as loot in fact, and dragged back to be a slave. I would find her and bring her home. I thought of Aidan, the betrayer. I had treated him as a friend, and that mistake had cost me dearly. I would find him, and he would pay. Finally, I thought of that ghastly, scarred face, with one merciless eye, coldly looking at his victims. This was the man who had slain my brother and taken my uncle's sword away. I would find him, kill him, and bring the sword back home. Part 2. Elmit. Chapter 7. Muster at Wixton. The next morning the official summons arrived. Lord Wallace was ordering all the company to muster at Wixton. Father called me into his room, where he lay in his bed, still recovering from his wounds. He looked me up and down for a moment. "Son," he began at last, "I must ask you to grow up fast. Lord Wallace has called for the men of the village to go to him, and that means they must have a leader." I nodded, feeling, with a growing sense of anxiety, that I knew where this conversation was going. "With Cuthwin," he started, then paused, unable to say the word "dead." "With Cuthwin gone, and me injured, you must do it." "Father, I'm not sure I can. I'm afraid I will mess it up." "You must do it," he said abruptly. Then, just as suddenly realizing he had spoken harshly, he smiled at me. "Curdic, you're my son, and I know what you can do. You can depend on Grettir. He will advise you wisely. The men are brave and will fight well, but they need a leader. That has to be you. Lead, and they will follow." So it was that 10 men got ready to leave the village that afternoon. There was Grettir, Cuthbert, Edward, 6 of the villagers, and myself. We gathered our weapons, and we were supplied with ale, smoked cheese and meat, as well as some bread. The village folk gathered to see us off. I looked to Edith, hoping to say something to her, but I could not spot her. The mood around the village was bleak. Only a few days before, the village had lost 12 members, and now another 10 were going away. No one argued. We were going to try and get the others back, after all. Yet, the fear hung in the air that morning, unspoken, but palpable, that there would be yet more loss, more death, and more sorrow to cope with in the days ahead. Some families parted emotionally. Others, without a word. Mother hugged me as tightly as she had not done for many years, and Saniba kissed me on the cheek. Neither said much, but from the expression in their eyes, I read the words, "Come back, Kurdic." As we marched towards the Roman road that would take us to Wixton, I glanced behind. I could just see the villa in the distance and, standing there, still watching us, my mother and sister. As I reached the main road, the villa disappeared from sight, and I felt an aching, maudling feeling in my heart. This was it. I was going to war. Through childhood, it had been this moment I had dreamt about and waited for. Lila's warriors were always brave and valiant, so why did I feel scared and homesick? Just then, I saw a shadow under a large beech tree beside the road. The shadow detached itself and came into the light, and I recognised, with a jump of the heart, that it was Edith. She moved towards me, looking bashful, yet eager to say something. "Kurdic, I wanted to say, that is, I need to say," she stammered. This was new. Edith was usually self-assured and full of laughter. She blushed, then, taking a step forward, kissed me on the lips. Before I could say a word, she ran past me, without looking back, and on down the lane to the village. I stared after her for a few moments, before realising I was standing on my own in the road, and that I was now 50 yards behind the rest of the men who were still heading north, towards Wixton. Turning away from sights and thoughts of home, I ran and caught up with the rest of our band and marched with them, off to war. It was early afternoon when we reached Wixton. From a distance we could see a pall of smoke that still lingered over the town. Many houses were damaged, not a few burnt down completely. The townsfolk were walking around with the same dazed expression that the villagers of Kurdam had worn the last few days. In the market square, a few dozen men were already gathering. Men and youths from the company were cleaning and sharpening weapons. From the nearby smithy the sounds of forging and hammering could be heard, whilst the womenfolk were organising food supplies on carts. In the centre of the chaos, on a dais outside the main hall, stood Lord Wallace wearing a well-made but slightly rusty chain shirt and a sturdy helm. Grettir stopped walking, and we all gathered up behind him. I waited to see what would happen next, but then noticed that everyone else was looking at me, and I realised that they were expecting me to talk to Wallace. Gulping and feeling the eyes of every man in the square upon me, I walked up to him and made a slight bow. "Lord Wallace, how are things in Wixton?" I asked. Wallace looked at me blankly for a minute, as if not sure who he was expecting to see. Then he blinked and spoke. "Ah, Kurdic, it's good to see you again, but not like this. I'm sorry to hear the news about your brother. He was a brave warrior," he said. I just nodded and thanked him for his sympathy. "As you see," Wallace went on, "we were hit hard here. Also, about 50 warriors, the bulk of their force, attacked us. Maybe another 20 raided farms and villages to the north. A heavy raid indeed. 20 of our men were killed, and as many again wounded. But we drove them off, the maggot-ridden scum. I wonder what was behind all of this. Why did they attack right now? I mean, the Amatae have not attacked in my lifetime," he said. "Oh, I know about the rumours of an alliance with Regid, and I guess I knew that one day it would happen, but we have not heard anything to suggest an agreement has been reached, nor less about attacks elsewhere. Just one warband, say 100 men, from Elmet attacking alone? It does seem odd." So I told him about the Amber Treasure, and the news that the warband's leader, a one-eyed warrior chief, had been asking for it. I told him about Aidan, and how I thought he had betrayed the news of that great prize to them. He nodded and looked thoughtful. Then, sitting back on a cart loaded with spears, he rubbed his chin and squinted at me. "Of course, Samnor One-Eye could not resist that," he said. Then, realising the quizzical expression on my face, he explained, "Prince Samlin is brother to Kerdig, the King of Elmet. He took that wound to the eye years ago in the fighting near Eorforwic, when Elmet sent an army to help hold the city. Since then, he has hated us and wanted revenge. What I hear is, it is Samlin who is trying to persuade his brother to ally with Owen, and has been desperate to make his name in the war against us. He is proud, as well as cruel. He does, however, have a weakness. He does love plunder and loot to levels bordering on obsession. So, he would be likely to go after my mother's jewellery. Wallace looked at me and then nodded. Yes. Yes, he would. Perhaps even if Ceredig had not yet agreed to fight us. But he is jealous of his treasures. Therefore, he attacks in many places, so that the rest of his men are occupied ransacking poor farms and our town. Meanwhile, he led a much smaller group, maybe those most loyal to him, to the villa, to claim his prize. Around us, the carts had been loaded now, and more of the company had assembled. Wallace looked at them for a moment, then quietly back at me. This can alter things. Ceredig hesitates because he has little money. Wars cost money, and he will need a lot to attack us. That amber treasure and the rest, it's worth a fortune. It could arm and keep an army in the field for months. I began to wonder if the jewels were cursed. They seemed to bring nothing but death and disaster. In any event, it looked like I now had a fourth reason to go to Elmet. Then we must try and get them back, my lord. Wallace nodded. Yes, Ceredig, we must. The company assembled, and Wallace asked the leader of each contingent to join him in a council. I represented the villa. Wallace had laid out a map on the table. It was made of cured vellum, now cracked and torn with age. I had never seen one before, and looked at it curiously. It's old, that map. When we attacked here Forwick when I was young, we took plunder and treasure. One of the Welsh lords had some scrolls, and this was with them. I think it was made by the Roman army just before they left, Wallace explained. I peered at it again, but it was all lines and letters, which I could not understand. Looking around at the doubtful expressions on the faces of the others present, I knew I was not alone. So, Wallace interpreted it for us. See that picture that looks like a castle? That is here Forwick. The Romans called it Eberarcum. Wixton does not seem to have existed at the time, but all the Roman forts and villas are on it. Look, Ceredig, that is your villa, he said, pointing at a small square near the Roman road that ran past Curdham and on to Ere Forwick. He then waved his hand at another part of the map. Now, everyone, look over there. That's the River Derwent, and that is the Ouse. Our scouts report that the trail left by the raid went that way, over the river, just west of the villa, and Ceredig here thinks he saw Samlin and his band go past the Royal Forest there just 3 nights back. I nodded, and then I had a thought. Cuthbert had told us that he occasionally went hunting with his father in the borderlands west of the River Derwent. They had, out of curiosity, once strayed as far as the River Ouse, and reckoned that it had been a day's journey from the village to the border and back again. If so, it would take us a good half day to reach the border from where we were. But what he had also told me was there was a ford over the Derwent just near where we were boar hunting, and another crossing the River Ouse further to the west. I told Wallace this. Right then, he said, biting his lip. I think that was where they were heading. If so, we should be able to follow them easy enough. After that, I don't know. The biggest settlement in the area is Salabia, one of the other men said. Wallace nodded and pointed, and we could see a small town just the other side of the Ouse. He tapped his hand on the map further over. The Welsh capital is at Lloydis there. But that is 20 miles or more beyond the border. We must hope they have not gone that far. Our fears were that we might be captured in Elmet by the warriors of King Ceredig of that land, and taken off to slavery, or even just killed. We would have to travel quietly through hostile territory, which is going to be hard for 100 of us. Yet, if we could manage a surprise attack on wherever our people were being held, we might be successful. Wallace told us to be ready at dawn, and sent us to get sleep. I was just leaving when there was a knock on the door, and one of Wallace's older veterans entered. He was a wild-looking man called Sigmund. He stepped up to Wallace, who nodded at him to speak in front of us all. He had been compiling a list of the dead, wounded, and those missing from the town. Apart from the 20 men who were slain, I reckon 30 or more folk are missing, my lord. Some of them have been seen being dragged away, others we have no idea about, like Molly Baker, the lad Husser, my sister Emma, Ken the Farrier, and several others besides. So, Husser was missing as well as Mildred. In all likelihood, they would be taken to the same place. Wallace was thinking this too. Well, maybe we'll find them all in one group, if we move quickly. Right, he said, clapping his hands. I think it's time for sleep now, and then we will see what fortune tomorrow brings. Bowing, we left Wallace alone in the room, with his map, and I went to find the villagers and myself a place to sleep. The company departed Wixton at first light, amongst scenes like those the previous day at the villa. The anxiety felt by their relatives for the men about to depart, and the hope that we might find those taken from them, mixed as one in embraces and final words. Then we were off and marched along, following the trail left by the raiders, which was still visible in the mud and damaged crops through the fields southwest of Wixton. As we walked along, I spotted, with surprise, the Bard Lila amongst the ranks, chatting to the men, telling jokes and singing little ditties. He came over to us and greeted me by name.
"Sorry again about your brother, Curdick. Good man he was, I thought. I'll tell you a story sometime about what he got up to when he was away with the Fyrd a year or so back," he said with a sad little smile.
"Thanks, Lila. I would appreciate that one day, when the pain is less raw. But tell me, why are you here?"
"Oh, looking for songs," he replied cheerfully. He saw my quizzical expression and sighed, as if he was talking to the village idiot. "Sagas don't just pop into bards' heads, you know. We try and be where stories are happening, and then we know what to put in them. Can't that be a bit dangerous?"
"Well, yes, but I've been lucky so far."
"I hope your luck lasts then, for all our sakes," I muttered.
Mid-morning saw us across the Derwent near the villa, itself out of sight in the woods and hills to the east. By shortly afternoon we had reached the approaches to the ooze, and we slowed our pace to make a more cautious advance. Finally, we halted, and Wallace sent out scouts across the river to trace the direction taken by the warband. Whilst they were away, we rested and ate some bread and meat as we crouched in low scrub overlooking the ooze. About a mile to the west and a little away down the river, we could see the smoke from a small settlement, and beyond it, a larger town, Salabia. Further west, the hills rose higher and higher until they became the mountains of the Pennines. After about an hour, our scouts returned to us.
"We're in luck, my lord," a bright-eyed woodsman from the Wolds reported. "I don't think there can have been any rain here for a few days, for the mud on either side of the ford still shows the tracks the raiders left. Several score feet passed that way, and then seemed to have veered northwest, away from Salabia."
"Northwest? That's a surprise. What's in that direction?" Wallace said to himself, as much the scouts and pulled the rolled-up map out of his tunic. He squinted at it for a moment, grunted, then looked up at the company.
"There's an old Roman fort northwest of Salabia, perhaps 5 miles from the ford. Its name is..."
He brought the map closer to my eyes.
Calcaria, I think. I would guess Samlin was going that way. If so, we should find him there."
"If he's still there, my lord," I pointed out.
"Indeed, but we'll only know by going," he said, and stared at the slate-grey sky above us. "Well, there may not have been any rain since the raid, but that we might have some soon. Press on. I would like to get some shelter near this fort, and take a look at it today, if we can."
To begin with, all went well. We moved down to the river and found a shallow crossing point. Then we waded across the clear, icy waters and clambered up the far bank. We had now left Deira, and I gazed back over my shoulder with a sudden feeling of anxiety. My home, what was left of it, was back there. Edward and Cuthbert saw me looking, and paused too. We were now further away from home than I had ever been. It could only have been 10 or 11 miles, and looking back now over the thousands of miles I was to wander later on, it was just next door. But there and then, to the young man I was, it felt a very long way indeed.